Thank you, Linda. So, I wanted to just begin our time together, this talk with you, to invite you to join me in a little exercise. So just sitting comfortably, closing your eyes if you're comfortable doing that. And just imagining yourself as an old person. And if you're already there, just add another 5 or 10 years. So bringing an image to mind, noticing what shows up, perhaps words or thoughts, feelings, maybe even body sensations, as you imagine yourself as a really old person, at least over 70. Okay, just opening the eyes. And just shout out a word or two, as Linda has just started us off, with what that experience was like for you.
Supported by family.
Supported by family. What else showed up for you?
Contentment.
Peace. Joy. Wrinkles. Yeah. Less energy, someone said. I didn't hear. Activism. Thank you, my husband. Hopefully more enlightened. More physical challenges. Loss. Pain. Pain. Did I hear you right? Pain. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I just invite you to keep that experience and what showed up for you in mind as I offer you this talk on aging this morning. There are a few reasons why this topic of aging is meaningful for me. First, I'll be 75 in a few months, so I qualify as a chronologically endowed person. And I've spent a fair amount of time now contemplating my life. If there's some truth in that the challenge of aging is not so much about how old we are, but rather how we are old. I wanted to give some attention to how I am and how I want to be as an old person, hopefully and consciously will continue to grow into older age. And secondly, I began to witness and certainly directly experience ageism, which actually is the biggest ism in our society, because for many of us, we will grow old if we're fortunate enough. I also recognized my own internalized ageist views and wrong perceptions, and I needed to challenge those and change them. We live in a society that's youth-focused. Illusion is rampant regarding the truth of impermanence, the inevitability of aging and death. And this is evidence, for example, and is valued and supported by a multi-billion dollar anti-aging industry. How many of you might own some anti-aging cream? So from cosmetics, plastic surgery, images of the perfect body, including anorectic or bulimic fashion models, and Hollywood's general insistence on skinny or shapely bodies, and beautifully sculpted faces for women, and now even for men. Our songs and our language often equates old age with decline, senility, and frailty. Aside from some of the songs I chose for the service today, I also wanted to read to you the lyrics from one of Tom Lehrer's songs. Some of you might remember Tom Lehrer. The song is entitled, When You Are Old and Gray. Since I still appreciate you, let's find love while we may, because I know I'll hate you when you're old and gray. So say you love me here and now. I'll make the most of that. Say you love and trust me, for I know you'll disgust me when you're old and fat. An awful debility, a lessened utility, a loss of mobility is a strong possibility. And in all probability, I'll lose my virility and you your fertility and desirability. And this liability of total sterility will lead to hostility and a sense of futility. So let's act with agility and while we still have facility. For we'll soon reach senility and lose the ability. Your teeth will start to go, dear. Your waist will start to spread. In 20 years or so, dear, I'll wish that you were dead. I'll never love you then at all the way I do today. So please remember when I leave in December, I told you so in May. So we might need to take a little deep breath after those words. So all of these examples and many, many more create the myths about old age and the glorification of youth, that youth is better and that we actually don't need to age at all. I recently completed a 2-year intensive chaplaincy program, and in my role as chaplain, I offered spiritual care in skilled nursing facilities and assisted living situations. And I certainly witnessed ageist attitudes amongst well-meaning staff. I had the opportunity in those facilities to raise some consciousness about ageism and in healthcare in general. And in order that staff could recognize their own beliefs and prejudices about old people and not perpetuate the harm that ageism brings to bear. And thirdly, as a member of this congregation, I, along with others I've spoken with here, also have experienced ageism in this fellowship, which is really a contradiction to our UU principles of respecting the worth and dignity of all beings, of justice and equity and compassion in relationships, and certainly our seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of existence of which we are all a part. According to research conducted by several individuals, agencies, and organizations that I studied who were specializing in the field of aging, experts assume that aging is normal, lifelong, and cumulative, and I quote, a ubiquitous, continuous process of human development that extends across the lifespan, a simple definition. They note that older age brings new opportunities for growth, for contribution, for self-expression. And this observation also speaks to the expert view that aging is not synonymous with decline, with disease, with disability. So with the right contextual and social supports, older adults can remain healthy or maintain good health and high levels of independence and functioning and well-being, even while we're experiencing some of the natural changes in vision, hearing, mobility, perhaps muscle weakness and balance problems that are associated with aging. Researchers also found that their positive findings were in contrast with the American public perspective, which views aging as generally negative, tantamount to decline and dependency. That the aging process is something to be resisted or battled rather than embraced. Ageism actually impedes society's ability to reap what's called the longevity dividend. According to research, older Americans represent an enormous source of civic and economic contribution. But ageist assumptions about their abilities deny the realization of these contributions. There is also an implicit assumption that ageism constrains age-related policies, pointing to things like apathy, invisibility, low expectations for older adults as obstacles to policy initiatives and reforms. Dr. Atul Gawande, author of the book Being Mortal, which I highly suggest you read, and Dr. Bill Thomas, who wrote the book What Are Old People For? Both are physicians whose research and writings about these myths about old people, about who old people are and what age is or isn't. They both also write about our shameful history in this country in terms of the way old people have been treated. And this is changing, of course, but our views, our beliefs, our isms are still an issue for all of us to continue to be conscious about and perhaps participate in remedying and transforming, perhaps beginning with exploring our own ageist views or perspectives. There are a number of changes that occur naturally in the course of a lifetime, just as our giving tree told us, and that many of them can be experienced as challenge. Some are unique and some are universal, but none of them make us less of a human being. We typically do experience changes in physical and cognitive ability that can be challenging. Falling, for example, due to weakness and balance problems is an all too common experience in our older population and can result in a cascade of problems for us. And as someone mentioned this morning, loss is certainly a part of life, but it becomes more of a central theme and challenge in our older adult years. Some losses are predictable in old age, while some are the result of ageism and wrong perceptions and views. The more universal or common experiences of loss or potential loss might include loss or changes in physical or cognitive functioning, which may lead to a loss of sense of independence and freedoms like driving an automobile. The loss of home and connection to familiar community, perhaps due to living in skilled nursing facilities or assisted living situations. A loss of spouse or other family members and friends due to illness or death or geographical distance. Loss of a sense of security and even confidence. Loss of the opportunity for meaningful engagement in life, leading to a sense of a lack of purpose and meaning, identity, dignity, and positive views about ourselves. And some of these may be attributed to natural or organic changes. Others are due to society's ageist views. And some of the suffering that we experience in old age may be rooted in our attachment to what was, or our fears and aversions to what might be, as well as denial of the truth of impermanence. We age, we die. And these internalizations or attachment to myths or beliefs of who we are or how we should be as old people and are typically developed at a very young age. In his book, Still Here, Embracing Aging, Changing, and Dying, Ram Dass notes that as we age, we are trained to believe how old people think and live, and that our egos get us to believe that we are something less than we are, rather than something more. Dr. Carol Levy and her colleagues at Yale University noted that internalized ageist beliefs become a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy in the older adults, where they begin to behave in ways, or we, not they, I'm part of that group, where we begin to behave in ways that convey that we are no longer useful, that we are no longer able or independent or healthy or active. And in her book, Elderhood, Dr. Louise Aronson noted that adults who hold a more negative view about aging report lower levels of life satisfaction, well-being, and social supports. And in fact, they actually are more likely to be hospitalized or die younger. This past year, I wrote a thesis as a requirement for my chaplaincy program entitled The Suffering and Freedom from Suffering in Old Age. And in my study, I explored a number of relevant issues with 65 people, ages 70 to 104. mostly middle class and representative of a diverse religious affiliation or no affiliation. And my findings were generally consistent with the major research in the field of aging. But one of the unique questions I ask that I invite you to consider is, what word or phrase do you resonate with that is used in our culture to describe you as an older adult? So the term elderly was offered, which was globally rejected. So if you use that term, you might be a little more conscious about that. It was globally rejected as it connoted frailty, disability, dementia. Elder was another word that was sometimes rejected, particularly by those who didn't feel so wise or didn't feel that they had something of importance or meaningful to contribute. And of course, old person was acceptable by everyone given the truth of the words, but it really didn't say much about the group. And senior or senior citizen was the most acceptable term, so you may relate to that. But my 104-year-old woman said, "I don't want to be labeled anything. I'm just a person, and that's that." But recently, just a few months ago, thanks to Richard Lederer, who is known for his way with words, he emceed a conference on aging in which I presented a workshop on mindful aging. He offered what I considered to be a perfect positive phrase for us, which is chronologically endowed. I just let that land for a minute. I love it. So there are a multitude of myths and beliefs describing old people and old age. For example, that old age is a disease and a disaster. Actually, there is no diagnosis or diagnostic category for old age in the DSM, which is the Diagnostic Statistical Manual that's used in healthcare. Of course, there are conditions that may be related to old age, but old age in and of itself is not a disease or a dysfunction. Myth that we are described as less than younger people, that we are mindless, sexless, useless, powerless, that we all have or will have dementia. Actually, only 6 to 8% of people over the age of 65 are diagnosed with dementia. And that we are no longer capable of learning. I know that I'm not unique, but I went back to college for another master's degree at the age of 63, and then I entered in a very intensive two-year training chaplaincy program when I was 73. Another myth, especially that was supported quite a bit in this last election, and that we are a burden on society. And good grief, that we're all alike. So one of the questions addressed in my research was how people in this group were finding meaning and purpose. Most responses included engagement in community and family. So relationships were really high on the list. Volunteering skills. Some people were still employed in professions that were meaningful. Sharing their wisdom derived from experience from a life long lived. And being valued and acknowledged in some way as contributing members of our society. And of course, the opportunity to learn new things. Another question was, what do you celebrate, honor, and appreciate about being an older adult? And there were themes to these responses. The theme of gratitude was very strong. Freedom was another one. Freedom to be who we are. One person said, "I have what I have, I am who I am, and I don't need to seek any more." And another said that she was less concerned now about who she wanted to become. Time was another theme. Time to be able to use as we wish, not constrained by others' needs or schedules. And the love of learning new things was also a theme. And I'm reminded here of a quote by Gandhi, who said, "Live as if you were to die tomorrow, and learn as if you were to live forever." Celebrating life as a whole and appreciating its entirety, including the tough stuff, which for many offered new growth opportunities. the confidence and joy that they still had much to contribute and the opportunities to serve as so many serve this community. And honoring their own wisdom, clarity of perspective, and deeper understanding of life in all its aspects. Appreciating good or moderately good health and the ability to stay active. And several said that they were celebrating that they were still alive and they got to be an old lady or an old man. In our guest bathroom, we have a framed Irish saying that says, "Do not complain about being old. Many don't have the privilege." And spiritual life and inspiration to continue to explore and to grow in this realm was important to some. And actions that supported satisfaction, happiness, and contentment was another question I explored. And so many of us, so the first one was establishing or maintaining relationships with family, friends, and communities. So for many of us, our UUSFSD community is a source of opportunities to meet new people and to cultivate relationships. Many of the relationships I've established here in this fellowship were created through working on projects or on committees. Social action, for example. In fact, I met my now husband, Irv Himmelblau, at the very first social action committee meeting that I attended on the very first day that I attended a service here in 1999. So it's one of the many reasons I'm grateful to be part of this community. And speaking of gratitude, as Mary Ellen Drummond inspired us to express regularly in her beautiful sermon last week, thank you again, Mary Ellen, there you are. The ability to recognize and express gratitude for positive experiences, big or small, is actually found to be one of the major ways we maintain a sense of happiness and well-being in old age. And that actually is true across the lifespan. And the ability to be physically active is also shown to support satisfaction and contentment. I think of people in this fellowship like Mary Lou and Ken Schultz, who are in their late 70s, who still bicycle to this fellowship from Leucadia on Sundays. I remember dear Sam Messon, whom some of you knew, a longtime member of this fellowship and the first person who actually greeted me here, who was in his 90s, was at the gym every day swimming laps, much to the astonishment of the younger folks who were in awe of him, including my husband at that time. Not my husband at that time, but my husband at the time that he was beside Sam in the gym. I know many others in this fellowship and elsewhere who continue to engage in regular physical activity, which supports what could or perhaps even should be viewed as the norm versus an exception in our chronologically endowed population. And having a sense of satisfaction in the workplace. I remember, Nancy and Roger Harmon were just visiting with us, and I remember Nancy's mom, Florence, who was still teaching nursing into her mid-80s, and one of my former clients who was tutoring math into her late 80s. And I'm still working in professions that I love. And though my family and my friends keep asking me when I'm going to retire, my answer as I know it today is, as long as this brain and this body keep functioning, I'll probably still work. And opportunities for meaningful engagement at any time in life is important, but especially in our older age. So one of our founding members, Carol Mason, who is soon approaching 90, happy birthday, Carol, remains an active member of this congregation with a particular interest in the environment. And Carol was instrumental in organizing a UUFSD presence to protest gun shows at the Del Mar Fairgrounds. Thank you for that, Carol. Yeah. And I think of Judith Barney, a member of this fellowship in her 90s, who has offered her editorial skills in a multitude of ways. And she still prepares lunches for our buildings and grounds crew who works here every month. And dear feisty Bev Connors was a very active member of our social justice group and she was a very engaged activist outside of this community. When she no longer could march, Bev registered people to vote, and she also wrote to her congressperson right up until just shortly before she died. And my beloved husband, Irv, who in his 80s continues his volunteer work with refugees, with the homeless, with the undocumented workers. And I know how meaningful this is to him and how much it adds to his purposeful life. And let us not forget Caroline DeMar, Ed Ulm, Betsy Gilpin, Karen Eckhart, Greg Brown, and so many others with white hair who sing in our choir. Thank you. And there are lots of other chronologically endowed in this fellowship who continue to help lead and support this beloved community. And one of the changes I am hoping to initiate and support is to include in our rituals of marking lifespan transitions, as we do with baby dedications, coming of age, and bridging, a ceremony for the passage into old age, which of course is a personal decision as to when that is. And I am hoping that Reverend Thomas, our new interim minister, will co-create that celebration with me sometime this year, and that it become one of the many traditions that we acknowledge and celebrate in our fellowship. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, almost 17% of the population, or almost 50 million people, are 65 years or older. That number is predicted to increase substantially by 2050. And those over 85 years of age, I'd like to see hands for those of you who might be over 85 years of age. I know that you're here. Yes, thank you. Right, beautiful. Those over 85 years of age are the fastest growing age-related population in this country. So reframing can help people see aging as a continuous process and to recognize that older age, like any other time of life, involves both opportunities and challenges and joys. My hope is that each of us will continue to challenge ageism and dispel the myths about being old, not denying our challenges, but emphasizing and celebrating the joys of being old, acknowledging our strengths and our contributions, and the value and valuing our chronologically endowed population, which is an ever-growing group. And I would like to close now by offering the wisdom of Andy Rooney, whom some of you might remember, certainly if you're over 70 anyway. He died at the age of 82, 1 month before his last show on the TV show 60 Minutes. And Andy says, "It's paradoxical that the idea of living a long life appeals to everyone, but the idea of getting old doesn't appeal to anyone." Thank you.